On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute past the hour on the 9th of May 2013. All switches thrown. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Your home for what we like to call conversation radio. Easily accessed at said website by clicking the listen live button or on a wide variety of internet platforms and apps for your mobile devices. Things like TuneIn Radio or Stitcher Internet Radio app, available for smartphones, Android devices, iPhones, what have you. Is anybody actually using a smartphone that runs a Windows platform or a Microsoft? I don't know. But they probably... Anyway, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. And I invite you to celebrate, or at least, if not celebrate, no, we don't really celebrate those. No, I share them. If it makes you crazy, it probably makes us all crazy. It is, in fact, a thorn in the side. A note, before we get started. I want to thank Diane and Horst for getting us started with tonight's fundraising. I can happily say that we've reached the Thursday night goal. The same thing happened last night. It's quite amazing. Many thanks for making that happen. If I may be so bold as to say it, if we try... we might actually start trying to catching up with what happened, the hole we found ourselves in at the end of April. And the PayPal button or the traditional mail address are both equally available for doing that. Thank you very, very much. Yeah, if we can get ahead, it would be a real bonus. No, I wanted to start up tonight with something that came in late toward the end of the program. Last night, came in from Beth in Texas, in response to the, what was his name, Jason Richwine? A correction, I read an email from Thomas last night. He wanted to set the record straight. He said he did not write that. He got that from, I think the diarist's name is Empty Vessel over at Daily Kos. So, okay. But the Jason Richwine, no one knows if Hispanic people will ever be as smart as whites, remember that? The stupid, it hurts us. But Beth wrote in with a fascinating little note that just sort of opens the door on how bass-ackwards this country really can be when it comes to issues of this artificial construct we like to call race. In an email with the subject line, Racial Definitions from the Texas State Government, Beth tells us, providers of abortion care in Texas must submit reports to the state detailing various categories of information about their patients. One of the things, I'll bet there's more details that have to be submitted in that regard than there are in, say, a doctor's office or a full-on hospital or just about anywhere, you know, because the right-wing Republicans want to make reproductive care as odious and burdensome as it possibly can be. And if they can work in a little shaming along the way, well, more the better, right? Providers of abortion care in Texas must submit reports to the state detailing various categories of information about their patients. One of the things we must report is the patient's race or ethnicity. The Department of State Health Services sends us guidelines to be used in our reports. Only, and that's in bold, that's why I said it that way, only patients of Mexican origin are to be reported as Hispanic. Dominicans are to be reported as black, and patients with origins in all other Spanish or Portuguese-speaking countries are to be reported as white. As an aside, Beth says, by the way, my own low IQ Hispanic daughters, according to the state, only half white, attended Rice and Yale on full ride scholarships. It must have been my lily white blood that did the trick. Surely their dumb Mexican daddy could have had nothing to do with it. Oh, God. Agnes's theory of having passed through the Bermuda Triangle and come back in the wrong, wrong alternate is beginning to get real traction with me. It's 2013. Really, I'm so not over that story. Jason Richwine received a PhD in public policy from the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard freaking University for a dissertation that declared Hispanic people are dumber than so-called white people and probably always will be. And yes, the deck was stacked. But really, when you're turning, I don't want to verge over into some sort of, I mean, intellectual and academic integrity and rigor and being open to all. Sure. But at some point, do some things not? I mean, you know, like the Earth being flat. Would Harvard's Kennedy School of Government give a public policy PhD to someone who argued that the flat earth prevents... Because that's what this Hispanics are not as smart as white people argument is. It's flat earther. And it's utterly, unless I've just missed out completely, it's utterly discredited. And they gave a guy a PhD for saying it. Does Harvard not realize that, well, its cachet is significantly diminished when we find out things like this? My chintzy little law degree from West Virginia feels a lot better all of a sudden. At least I didn't have to listen to anybody talking about which skin colors were smarter than the other skin colors. But that's apparently cool. At Harvard. For the first time in my life, I saw the campus of that august institution last year, about this time. And I remember thinking what a magnificent experience it would have been to have gone to school there. Now, not so sure. Maybe it's all in the name. Oh, yes, that's right, Irish Dave, that's right. May 9th, 2013, the National Day of Praying. Anything getting any better? Praying working? Nah, I didn't think so. Jiminy Christmas. Harvard. Giving out eugenics PhDs. Maybe I'm using the word wrong. Maybe that means I've got some kind of blood in me that's just keeping me from thinking real white. I mean, right. Kind of hard to get past this first thorn. This was on my mind when the show closed last night. It was on my mind when I woke up this morning, and obviously it's still on my mind. Now, the fact that this clown got this PhD and then translated it into a nice, sweet job at the Heritage Foundation, where apparently you don't have to check your Klan robes at the door. Man, that's some market, that free market. Because the right wing doesn't even like the new study from the clowns over at the Heritage Foundation Circus. Really? It's pretty obvious. They're staying away from it in droves. But remember, it's being run by Jim Demented now, who found the lunacy of the right wing in the Senate of the United States to be not quite lunatic enough. So he went pro. You know what Dr. Thompson said. When the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. There it is. And meanwhile, also, a little update. You remember Adam Kokesh, Adam versus the Man, from the other night? The guy that wants to lead an armed march on Washington, D.C. on the 4th of July? That Adam Kokesh? You remember when we were talking about his gig on, what was it, Tuesday night? Maybe Monday? We said that he had 700 people committed to doing the march. Well, it's Thursday, and now he has 2,000. 2,000 people who want to strap loaded rifles across their shoulders, over their shoulders, and march from Alexandria, Virginia, across the Memorial Bridge, up Independence Avenue, around the Capitol, past the Supreme Court, and back down to the, you know, our White House, where that one lives. He's got 2,000, and at that rate, he'll have his 10,000 by July the 4th. It is noteworthy, however, that the D.C. Metro Police Chief, Kathy Lanier, has responded to the word of this alleged piece of civil disobedience. She said in an interview, "When you cross with firearms and you're not in compliance with the law, now you're talking about a criminal offense and there's going to be some action by police. Obviously, there has been no permit filed by the organizer and we've not made contact with the organizer yet. But we will, and we'll make sure they understand that if they want to pass through the District of Columbia with loaded firearms, as long as they're in compliance with the firearms laws for transportation of firearms to the district, we're all for it. But passing into the District of Columbia with firearms is a violation of the law, and we'll have to treat it as such." Hmm. Seems like a pretty clear statement to me. I don't necessarily know what the law is about. I mean, you know, obviously, there have to be such laws. For instance, people go hunting, you know, and they have cases, and the cases are locked, and the firearm is in the case, and the ammunition is separate from the firearm. And, you know, you can fly to South Dakota to go pheasant hunting from National Airport in Washington, D.C. There have to be reasonable laws that address issues such as this. But I'm guessing that Adam, who sees his life as being versus the man... Wait a minute. The man... I'm guessing he's not going to want to carry his Freedom Protect rifle gun in a case locked with separate ammunition across the Memorial Bridge, up Independence Avenue, around the Capitol, past the Supreme Court, and back down to the White House where that one lives. No, they want to carry them openly and notoriously, as the language goes, to show that one that they mean business. No word yet on whether or not the Klan plans to march with them, or whether that is actually a redundant statement. It seems pretty clear that open carry is illegal in the District of Columbia. So it remains to be seen whether or not what Police Chief Kathy Lanier has said will make them see reason, or will instead propel them toward some sort of paranoid, deluded confrontation. Tosh wrote in a day or so ago to point out that it sounds, well, let me just get his email here. Tosh asks, does that plan sound like armed insurrection to you? Sure does to me. Perhaps the well-regulated militia, a.k.a. the National Guard, can show up in tanks and F-16s. I think that's what the D.C. Air National Guard flies. D.C. has National Guard units. And Tosh answered my question a couple of nights ago saying, no, there aren't any dart guns, but my understanding is there are several Gatling guns mounted atop federal buildings under the control of the Secret Service for purposes of detaching any aircraft from the sky. Hmm. Yeah, hmm, indeed. Yeah, the shine is definitely off the Ivy League, Marty. Marty noting, Ivy League, not quite what it used to be. So, 4th of July in D.C. is always said to be a fun affair. I had actually considered being there for it, and because the Congress is actually going to be in session for 3 weeks in July, and we can get a lot of ache work done that way. Now I'm not so sure. Because while the Freedom Protectors are passing by the Supreme Court, they'll also be passing by where we live. And I was talking with Agnes about it last night. She, no, Bob. No. No, we will not. No. Okay, dear. Because, see, having been married now for, lo, these 20 years, she knows me pretty well. And she's afraid that I would walk outside and start deriding their fragile masculinity and pointing out their penis extensions, their blue steel penis extensions. Oh, y'all sure do look manly up there. Oh, don't you feel proud? At which point, one of these freaks would probably turn around and gun my ass down. because they're hateful, right-wing freaks. So it remains to be seen. From 700 to 2,000 in about 3 days, and a line in the sand drawn by Police Chief Kathy Lanier of the D.C. Metro Police. Might get interesting. I hope it doesn't, but it might. So there's that. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I like conversation radio to be a little more conversational. So let's go ahead and open the lines, 304-658-3333, or on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, if you want to use that method. That's easy and free. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Well, goodness gracious, Tracy, how are you, dear?
Well, I'm excited to say that I'm actually going to Washington, D.C. Thank God I'm not going. What are they doing on the 4th of July? I missed that. What is going on? Are crazy people converging on Washington, D.C. on the 4th of July?
They say they're going to. They want 10,000 people to bring loaded rifles and march around Washington, D.C. on July the 4th.
Why? Is it because of our end of American independence? Is that what?
No, they're protecting their freedom.
What is it? What, protecting this freedom from what?
Well, you know, that one in their White House wants to get their guns.
But we don't want their guns. We just want them to have to be responsible with their
guns. Yeah. But, Tracy, see the radio waves that they're receiving through the fillings in their teeth are telling them that Obama wants their guns. Yeah, see, I make that noise a lot, too. Oh.
Okay.
The stupid is strong with these ones.
It's just, I mean, of all the things to be upset about, you know, what about the fact that maybe your kids aren't being educated or being fed enough?
If you cannot remedy it by pointing a gun at it, they're not interested, Tracy. Like, say, Meals on Wheels isn't bringing Granny her lunch anymore.
Yeah, because
you can't shoot the Meals on Wheels van and make Meals on Wheels better, so the gun goobs have no interest in it.
Right, because they cut the funding for this, they cut the funding for that. And so if you're gonna,
you know, we're having lotteries to find out which 4-year-olds get to stay in Head Start. The gun goobers can't point a gun at a 4-year-old to get them back into Head Start, so they're not interested.
I
know.
It's one of those things where you go, seriously? My thing is, it's like you said, you know, holding, why are we, there's too much money in this country that there's no way that a preschooler should not be able to go to Head Start. There's no reason why there should be, Granny shouldn't have to worry about whether or not she's going to get, first of all, there shouldn't be such a thing as Meals on Wheels, because there shouldn't, you know, Granny and Grandpa should have be able to survive on what they worked for all these years with Social Security. Oh, but no, they can't do that.
Yeah, there's a point to that.
Uh-huh. So instead of us being worried about, do they realize that, you know, when they talk about us, you know, the smaller government and all that, don't they realize that smaller government that they want to have is the part of that money where their government draw comes from? Do they not understand that?
Is this rhetorical or is it an actual question?
I just thought it would make you laugh.
Because there's a whole bunch of stuff they don't understand, Tracy.
And herein is where the problem lies. I think we talked about this once before. On a way to get, I mean, I guess maybe they're just so brainwashed that by fatty Rush Limbaugh and his ilk that they just don't hear or understand what's, you know, and I just wish there was a way that we could take a chisel, you know, and chisel away all the crap. Well, you wouldn't need a chisel for crap, would you? You just need a shovel. Okay. just shovel away some of the crap so they could actually hear. And maybe, like you said, when they put on their tin cup hats, you know, made out of aluminum foil and all that, and maybe one airwave will get through and say, this hurts you too. They don't care about you. You are a pawn. You are part of the great unwashed. They don't care about you. They're laughing. As a matter of fact, they're sitting back in their mansions while, you know, we're paying sales tax at Walmart, and that money doesn't even go to the state because Walmart cut a deal with some senator in that state. So when we pay sales tax, instead of it going to the state,
it goes back to Walmart.
It goes back to Walmart.
That's a great dodge, isn't it?
It's just like we were, you know, Prop 13 was one of the reasons why our Antonello is one of the reasons, not that one of my students was passed out sleep. You know, Prop 13 out here is one of the reasons why our schools in California have suffered so much.
Right.
But then again, because, you know, I mean, the more I read about it, the more I understand where it came from. So, you know, people wouldn't, you know, especially older people wouldn't lose their homes and be taxed out of their home. But leave it to the billionaires to find a loophole and so we still have to pay property taxes, but they don't.
Well, did you see the story about this little grift that the guy who has the Republican nomination in Massachusetts to run against Ed Markey for Senate? Did you see the grift that he ran?
No.
Yeah, he took a $200,000+ tax deduction for not modifying his home, and called it a contribution, which was then tax write-offable for a historic easement when the laws on the books in the town already said that he had to do it anyway. So he didn't do nothing. And we gave him some government welfare to the tune of nearly $750,000. Yeah, here's a hint. You don't get to do that.
No, I don't get to do that. I don't.
None of us do.
None of us do. And, but see, it troubles me because you hear about all this stuff, and then again, we go back to what happened to me. You know, $5,000? Really?
Yeah.
That I reported. Remember, I reported it.
Yes, I did. No, yeah.
So it's one of those things where you're going, golly gee willikers. And then we go to Ohio, where these women were being held captive for 10 years. Nobody noticed that?
Yeah, just, well.
I mean, at least with Elizabeth Smart, they were out in the boonies, okay? And you could kind of, but they were in the city.
Yeah, Cleveland.
Cleveland. I mean, that is a city, right?
There's even been a letter found now inside Ariel Castro's home. It details his life and things that happened to him, and then details how he went about the kidnappings.
Enough of this.
This is fascinating. The letter is by Ariel Castro.
Wait, the guy, the head kidnapper, now, was he the one, the mastermind?
Yeah.
Or was he one of the...
Yeah, because the other two weren't charged with kidnapping.
So what? Wait, okay, there's another confusing part. They weren't in on the kid, they weren't aiding and abetting while the women, they didn't know that these women were being held against their will?
Beats me. Listen to some of this. The letter that he writes, it was written in 2004, he says, I'm a sexual predator. I need help. And then he writes of the women, they are here against their will because they made a mistake of getting in a car with a total stranger. I don't know why I kept looking for another. I already had two in my possession.
Now, who did this letter? Did he mail this letter to somebody?
No, it was found in his home.
Oh, okay. I was about to freak out. I'm like, wait a second. I mean, I know there's some, some gross inadequacies, and just like, really? I was like praying to God that he did not mail that letter to somebody, and no one investigated. Okay. So he said, I already had two, but why did I go look for another one? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Makes you want to stay in the house and lock the doors, now, don't it?
Very much so.
And thanking, and praying to God that, and thanking God that you raised your children in a way that they would never do such a thing. That your daughters would be like, oh, hell no. And go screaming, running to the nearest cop or somebody else.
Bingo.
You know. But 10 years, Bob. And one of them has a daughter?
Yeah.
So, but the other two brothers, what I'm not understanding is why they weren't, what were they charged with? Anything?
Yeah, they were charged, just not with the kidnapping, as I understand it.
Yeah, that's because I go, me in the news, I kind of block it out, and I get snippets here and there. Because when I heard, of course I would sleep, me falling asleep with the TV on and having crazy dreams because I hear what's on TV and then I dream about it, or it somehow incorporates itself into the dream. So when I heard, I'm like, wait a minute, did they say 10 years? 10 years. But like I said, I'm not understanding why the other two aren't, but anyway, I'm not fond of our criminal and justice system anyway. I have some issues with it. How's everything going with the egg? Are you at home or are you in Washington?
I'm at home right now, but it looks like I may be heading back to D.C. next week for at least a couple of days to get a little bit more work in. We've got a rather important meeting going on Wednesday that I feel like I need to be there for. While I was there last time, we hand-delivered letters and flyers to something around 80 separate congressional offices, and now we're following up on the letters. And there's some really good advocacy going on out there by listeners to the horn who are advocating with their representatives. I'm feeling like it's a very good, worthwhile effort, and I think we're getting some traction.
So, as a Californian, what can I do to aid in making this happen? Who do I call? Who do I write?
Who's your member of Congress?
Oh yeah, we went over that again.
Yeah, that's Judy Chu, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, see, she's already on the bill, which is awesome.
Okay.
So the first thing, when you've got somebody who's on the bill, a good thing is to maybe write them and thank them for getting on the bill and saying, now we need you to go out and bring your colleagues in and do some advocacy in ways that people walking the halls can't do. A personal request from one member to another member often has profound profound impacts. So maybe that would be a good thing.
That's awesome. I could do that. Well, yeah. So like I said, I'm actually coming to Washington, D.C. Yay.
When?
My mom. My September 14th and 15th.
Wow.
And here's how this happened. My mom is preaching her first sermon.
Aw.
On Friday the 13th.
Well, everybody's got to start someday.
You're going to pick Friday the 13th. So anyway, she's preaching her first sermon on Friday the 13th. So I asked her that she wanted me to come out. She's like, duh. I'm like, okay. So I'm flying from here to Fayetteville, and one of my stops is Washington. So I'm like, why do I not, instead of flying out from Fayetteville to Washington back home, why don't we fly? I fly out of Washington back home. So we're going to take the trek from North Carolina to D.C.
That'd be fun. A little bit of a long ride.
Yeah, well, you know, what do I do for a living? Driving is, and I love driving on the East Coast. We love it.
Yeah, you like I-95.
Well, I just like how green and pretty everything is.
Okay, you know, okay. A little clarification.
Did
I understand you're going to take the train?
No, I'm flying from here, from L.A. to Fayetteville, but from Fayetteville to Washington, my mom and I are going to drive.
Okay.
From Fayetteville to Washington, and then I'm going to fly home from Washington, D.C.
Well, that will be a nice trip, and it's a beautiful time of year to be there. The weather's nice usually, and you can walk around some. You know, early autumn,
yeah.
End of summer.
I am just really excited because my flight doesn't leave until like 10 o'clock Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll probably get into D.C. I'm shooting for like noon, Saturday afternoon. Because we're going to leave, my mom doesn't know how early we're going to leave. Because if I tell her that we want to get up, that I'm going to get up at crack of dawn, she's going to protest. But if I just make sure her bags are packed and I wake her up and like enroll her into the car, she'll be fine. It's kind of like when we went to the Grand Canyon and we were doing a mini road trip. We drove from, she picked me up in Dallas. She gave me my sister and her drove from North Carolina to Dallas, and then her and I drove from Dallas back to L.A. And so we stopped along the way, and one of our stops was in Albuquerque in New Mexico. And so I got her up at the crack of dawn out of Albuquerque because I'm like, get up, let's go, because I want to be at the Grand Canyon for sunrise.
She must have just loved that.
Oh, she called. Well, my mom is, you know, an upright Christian lady, so she, you know, would never call me what I would call her, but we got up, but I made it to see the Grand Canyon at sunrise. The Grand Canyon National Park is over 24 hours. I did not know that at the time until I, you know, me doing my research.
Oh, but and by the way, I just got a note in from Marty saying that you could ask Judy Chu to lobby with folks like Doris Matsui.
Okay.
Yeah, another House member.
So you are guys, because you know me, I'm slow on the uptake at times. You guys are trying to get a bill passed, yes?
Yes, it's in the House. It's H.R. 526.
So I get to say I'm just a bill. Say I'm only a bill, and I'm sitting here on Capitol.
Yeah, that's the one.
See, I do remember something from Schoolhouse Rock.
Sure. I think we all do.
That's, you know, I actually have it on, all of them on DVD.
Really?
Yes. They sold it, and I was somewhere at Target, and they have every single one on, like, two DVDs. I snatched it off the shelf. I had to have it, and I was playing it one day, and everybody's looking at me like I'm crazy. I'm like, well, that's how I know the preamble to the Constitution from 30 years later. Okay, I mean, the power of music, what can I say? But I am so excited. I've never been to Washington, and I'm hoping that I know, because I was looking at the route, so I guess we drive up. Do we go up I-95? And we go through your part of your neck of the woods, yeah?
Sort of, but not really. No, I imagine you'll go up I-95, and that'll take you, or, you know, that won't really get you into Appalachia proper.
Okay. Well, hopefully, yeah.
I mean, there's I-81 runs along the Blue Ridge all the way up through Virginia. I don't know, if you wind up on 81, you'll get to see the Blue Ridge, and that, I mean, you talk about liking to see the scenery. That ain't nothing but straight beautiful.
See, but I would be really pissed. Somehow I'm going to see you if I have to. I mean, we'll talk about it. Unless you're like, I don't want to see you. You know, you want to meet me, Bob.
Absolutely.
In all my and all my Nubian beauty.
That's a line from Star Trek, isn't it?
I don't. You know what?
The one where Abraham Lincoln came. Yeah, yeah.
Oh yes, I.
And he called Uhura a Nubian princess or something.
Oh God! See, my mom will be right at home because she is married to a hillbilly.
Okay, then.
She is. I mean, I told you they live in a double wide.
Qualifies.
I think it's a double wide. I don't know. When I went to see it, I was just like, "Oh, okay." But it's a trailer. My mother lives in a trailer. That's a whole nother story right there. But I don't really have much to say about anything because, like I said, I got onto the tail end what you were talking about with the crazy people. So I will not be. I'm glad I won't be going to Washington D.C. for the 4th of July. Actually, we're going to state line. I got, you know, me and my little gambling. I got a thing in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
Nice free at state line, and they're going to have fireworks and the whole shebangy. So, you know, they're counting on me spending my money there, you know, gambling. But I'm excited. I've never been to Washington. I'm just, so I guess along the way you'll tell me where I should go about with the Black history stuff. What I mean, if you only have 2 days, I only have 2 days.
Yeah, and if you want to do some Smithsonian stuff, you'll have to do it immediately upon arriving there. Because it's Smithsonian's not open on Sunday.
Thank you. What? I know most museums aren't open on Mondays, but not Sunday. Well, that's okay. So that means I got to go to the Smithsonian as soon as we get there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And decide. Yeah. You know, what do you want? The National Gallery of Art, Natural History, Air and Space. Yeah.
That place you were telling me about, you said when you guys were there about the black soldiers in the Civil War.
Oh, yeah, that's the African-American Civil War monument up on U Street.
Right. So stuff like that. You know, how far is Dulles from D.C. anyway?
Dulles?
Uh-huh, that's where I'm flying into. I'm flying out of, I mean.
It's kind of a poke. It's really kind of a pain in the ass, frankly, to get to. You'd probably be better off if you were flying out of National.
No, I already bought my ticket, so there's nothing I could do about that.
It's a good half hour, 40 minutes out of town.
Well, that's fine because, like I said, my flight doesn't leave until like 9:30 at night.
It's every bit of a $50 cab ride.
Oh no, we're driving because I'm renting.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
So she's gonna.
Well, for an evening, for a Sunday evening, it'll probably be pretty easy traffic.
Right. Because I don't know nothing, and that's why I talk to people like you who know stuff. Because, you know, I mean, I can look everything up, of course, but it's better to go the places that are recommended. You know, I have until September to do this, but, you know, the more I know, the more I can research, and because I'm a planner and all that. So, but I'm very excited for you about the ACAT. I've been telling people about it as much as I can and doing my little part here in L.A. because it affects everybody. And people they just don't get it. They just don't get how something that happens in your part of the country affects everybody. Because if we could get stuff stopped in Appalachia and whatnot and so forth, then we can get stuff stopped in, you know, stuff stopped here for offshore drilling and you know, and some other and tracking in other parts of the country. And because our Earth, this is it, you know, I don't understand why people don't get it. Once it's gone, it's gone. And, you know, as much as, you know, I would think it was you. I don't know if AUBU was you that was. I was listening to the show the other day, and you were saying how that rich people think that just because they're rich, and if anything happens, they can all go into some bubble, and they'll be okay. I don't think they don't get it, do they? Because there will be still such bubbles.
Yeah. There's by the way, you've received a toaster nomination for this evening from Marty.
Oh, well.
He said, "That's great, Nubian beauty." No, Darlene said that. Marty, Darlene sent in the toaster nomination. Marty pointed out that I've got the Star Trek reference wrong.
Oh, what was the Star Trek reference?
Yeah, Abraham Lincoln looks at Uhura and says, "What a lovely negress."
Negress, that's what it is. Negress. So I was like, when you said Nubian, I'm like, I don't think Abe would be talking about a Nubian.
I thought Nubian was in that script somewhere. I still think it is.
It probably is, but not from Abe Lincoln.
Yeah, no. Abe Lincoln says Nubian.
He does.
I'm almost sure, but yes, he says, "What a lovely negress."
Okay. So, yeah, but...
that word.
Negress?
Negress.
Negress? Yeah.
Wasn't that one of P.T. Barnum's cons, This Way to the Negress? No, that was Egress. So. Egress.
Okay. Egress. Stupid.
Jesus.
This way.
Is it 9 o'clock yet?
No, it's like me when I wake up Monday morning and I look around and I say, "Is it Friday night yet? Am I waking up and it's Saturday morning?" No. Oh, Jesus Christ, Bob. Well, anyway, my love, I was just excited. I said, when I bought my ticket, I'm like, I'm getting closer and closer to you, Bob.
Exactly. Well, if I'm up there that weekend, we'll see some sights. Maybe
we have to do something. Like I said, even if I have to deviate, because I'm good for deviation. Leave it alone, Bob.
I'm gonna leave that one alone.
Leave it alone.
Just leave it hanging right above. Just let it just bounce off the rim and go on. There. Somebody can rebound.
Just leave it alone. Well, according to the right wing and all that, I'm a deviant anyway because I'm black and I have a girlfriend, so I am a deviant.
Hear. It's interesting you use that phrase though, Tracy, because what's his name? Chris Cuomo over at Chicken Noodle News was interviewing the woman who was involved in that murder trial in Italy and just berated her. I mean, I watched the video of it, and it was painful to watch. It was just icky. Let me see if I can find the quote real quick. It's just really, really gross. Won't take me a second. Oh, here it is. "Were you into deviant sex?" Insensitive question, but hey, we got to get to what it is. This fuels the doubt. "Were you into that kind of experimentation?" And she just says, Amanda Knox says, "No." "Did Meredith suspect you were into these types of things and created a barrier between the two of you?" No. "And therefore you resented her because she was judging you?" None of that? No, absolutely not. There's no evidence of that. "Oh, that's the theory. Knox is into some freaky sexual things. She tried to pull Meredith in, who was a staid, buttoned-up Brit. She wasn't into it, and it went wrong." This was in the discussion of the judges, right? And she says, "Absolutely. I was there in the courtroom when they were calling me things like violent, whore, and deviant, and it's all untrue." And so then he just, I don't know if he's enjoying it or some sort of thrill or... where were they getting any of that from? Did you have any type of experimental activities that you're embarrassed to talk about that they know about?
You don't see me, but my mouth is the gate.
You know, at the point she says, look, I wasn't strapping on leather and bearing a whip. I've never done that. But that, like the concept of race, Tracy, is an artificial construct. I will forever remember Peter Godbold's declaration one night that just floored us all during his show. Normal is nothing more than a setting on a dryer. There's nobody out there, straight or gay, nobody out there is having normal sex. Because there's no normal.
Normal is just a setting on a hair dryer.
Just a setting on a dryer. Permanent press, delicate, normal. Just a setting on a dryer.
That is awesome. I love that. Well, I know there's probably other people who want to talk to you. I can rattle on and on. But as usual, I miss you guys because I just have been so busy with work and stuff that I just haven't had a chance to.
Well, I'm glad you did find time to call in.
Well, I had to call to tell you I was coming to Washington, and we have to start getting my list of things to do while I'm there. But I'm excited, and I'm, like I said, September will be here in a moment. And like I said, don't be surprised if I'm knocking on your door telling you I sure is hungry. What y'all got to eat?
I know some places. Tracy, have a good night, dear.
You too, my dear. Talk to you later.
Bye now. Calling from Southern California, that's the lady cab driver, that's Tracy. And we'll keep it rolling. 304-658-3333 for this Thorn on the Side Thursday on the Horn, or Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, via Skype. Hey, welcome to the program.
Me again.
Hey, Bill, what's up?
Not much. I just been working on a new talking book that came out on Vietnam, and it's really well written, because you get a look at what went on between the French and Ho and company in depth, which is something we never hear a damn thing about over here. Because, you know, all those guys who were fighting on both sides in that era of time, they don't make any difference to us over here. That war was not a war until we got sent our people over there.
Right,
although,
yeah.
We were sending a lot of money over there from the time when that Korean War broke out. Truman started sending money to the French. Hell, the French had a U.S. aircraft carrier, the Belle of Wood, was flying the French tricolor, and French planes are flying off the decks. And the truth of the matter was, how much better off would we have been if we just said, because the people over there wanted a hope. Basically, because I remember when I was a kid, I was in a Catholic children's area, and I remember the local yokel Catholic newspaper with all the persecutions that were going on after the 54 agreement was signed and all this stuff, and oh, brother, and here we go again, you know.
Right.
But I just been so... what's going on with this country, Bob? Where are we headed, anyhow? Do you have any ideas?
You mean where are we going, and why are we in this handbasket?
Yes. How long is it going to go? I mean, I caught the tail end of the professor's show tonight. God, do I love that stuff, because that's a weakness of mine. Where he is at historically is, you know, something I really don't know much about.
You know, I learn something new every time I listen to it.
Well, I just figure this way. If a guy like me doesn't know it, what does the rest of the country know about it?
The rest of the country knows about as much of American history and the origins of American government as the people as the people in charge want them to know.
Yeah, that's the...
You know, that, for instance, is why civics education just died during the Reagan years.
Yeah.
And it's why it's proving to be so damn difficult to resurrect now, Bill.
Yeah, I have a buddy of mine who's bombards me with left email, and he taught history. In fact, he taught some kids that were fathered by the guy that used to be the representative out there, the one that retired, quit. I can't use his name offhand.
Yeah.
You know who I mean.
Yeah.
He gave up the job because that guy had a lot of labor ties. Because you can't be from Northern Ohio and not have ties with labor unions, you know.
Right.
I just caught the beginning of what you were talking about. Where were you going with that? What happened that I didn't hear about that people were pointing their finger at Hispanics?
Oh, no. It all started with this report that was released by the Heritage Foundation, Bill, that says that some sort of immigration reform... and their hair caught fire, and they were running around the yard going,
okay.
You know, because they're right-wingers, and they do that. They authored and released this report that says it's going to cost trillions of dollars, and they're going to suck up all our Medicare, and you know, like right-wingers care about Medicare.
Yeah,
and they're going to get our Social Security, like they care about that.
Yeah.
And so the right wing is just... I mean, even the weirdos are staying away from this report in droves, okay? So
yeah.
Then it turns out that one of the authors, a guy named Jason Richwine, a fairly newly minted Ph.D. from the Harvard Kennedy School of Government, got his Ph.D. awarded to him for a dissertation in which he claims that Hispanics are not as smart as white people.
Oh,
with, you know, white people, quotes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We're there. Again, and, you know, maybe it's a little boring to hear me say it or something, but you know, it's 2013. We should, as Reverbo used to say, we should have jetpacks and helium-filled pants by now. And instead, we've got Harvard giving PhDs to people who are resurrecting discredited, phony, baloney social and psychological theory that was stupid 75 years ago.
Yeah, it was ridiculous then.
You know, that's 1813 thinking, not 2013.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of thinking, you know, since you love history, and I do too, you know, that's the kind of thinking that you had both in the North and the South during the Civil War, trying to figure out what was going to happen with the freed slaves.
Yeah.
And including Abraham Lincoln, you had people, well, you know, they're just never going to be as smart as us.
Yeah, he didn't know whether.
And Lincoln saying, oh, can't we just put them on a boat?
Yeah, send them back. Send them back where they came from. Yeah, they really came here voluntarily to pick cotton. And...
Right, and at that time, you know, and it took people like Frederick Douglass looking at Mr. Lincoln saying, no, I'm not going to support that plan. We're Americans.
Yep.
Some of our families have been here longer than yours.
Yes. They were here
And you know, those incredibly intelligent white folks couldn't get that through their white skulls.
Yeah, they couldn't get it at all.
What? They feel like this is their home?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Of all things.
You know, never mind the fact that they had, you know, as Charles C. Mann points out in 1493, this country was built by persons of color.
Yep.
People of color have a greater claim on authorship and creation of the brick and mortar of this country than any number of white people do. Again, there's that word, white people, which has always, as we noted, been a fluid term.
I sometimes wonder, you know, you keep learning new things. For instance, I learned in a book by, what's his name, the great English author of history. He had a book on World War II called Retribution, which was the Japanese-American and, you know, European-Japanese war. Was titled Retribution, and he talked about when the Japanese seized Burma, they got control of the rice crop that fed most of India. And I had never realized this before, that the people in India were starving to death because Churchill wouldn't do a damn thing to alleviate the situation. Just look the other way and act like it wasn't happening. It's astounding when you keep learning new things constantly when you think you've heard it all. You know, it's just the way it goes. I just begin to wonder, is there something wrong with, well, is there something wrong with the Anglo-Saxon folks? Or is it just everybody that has a pale skin, is there something wrong with a lot of these folks that just don't get it?
Well, Bill, privilege is poisonous.
Yeah.
You know, we describe it as privilege, but the fact of the matter is, it's a toxin.
Yeah.
It ruins the way you think. It ruins the way you look at the world. It ruins, you know, you expect something of the world.
Well, I just learned something recently, that the southern states were planning on buying products made in empirical France and in Britain, and opening their own shopping malls in this country to sell products that were purchased over there with their profits from cotton. And we, of course, know where their profits from cotton came from. What helped them make a big profit from cotton? A little item called slavery. You know, that brought in a lot of money when you don't give two hoots and a holler about the people that are doing the work.
Precisely.
Well, isn't that what they're... They seem to be driving for the same thing today. But I was shocked to see that these people were thinking so far ahead, they'd open their own retail. And that would put a dent in New England and in the rest of the country. They didn't give a damn about anybody. They would put the screws to their white brethren from the North as easily as they put the screws to anybody.
Absolutely.
It seems to be, and it's the same crowd of people. Is there something in the water down there, Bob, that I don't know about? Because you know, you've been...
No, that's for them, sure. No, that's my ongoing theory, Bill. The institution of slavery and the genocide of the native people have forever poisoned anything that region sets its hand to.
Yeah.
I mean, even the great literature of the region. You can feel it. You know, you can feel it in Eudora Welty, in Faulkner, the Flannery O'Connor.
Yeah.
You can feel it in Robert Penn Warren and the so-called New South writers. It's there. It just some of them actually comment on it.
Yeah. I mean, they actually have enough courage to comment on it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jeez. That takes testicular fortitude. If you point a finger at, you know, if you're really pointing a finger at yourself, that's a tough thing to do.
But the whole, you know, the whole culture has, you know, a tincture of poison running through it. And it's still there, Bill.
Yeah. Yeah, some of the guys with their little flag decals and the nasty old rebel on his on the bumper sticker, yeah, that kind of thing.
And the South will rise again. Yeah, I grew up hearing that.
I have a saying about that amongst my buddies when we hung around with guys from the South. Yeah, you guys will rise up again and you'll kiss my, you know, and that would stop at that point. Because usually there was something flying at you by then. There was usually an argument going on that was more than verbal at the time. Because that's, you know, when you hand people something nasty like that, it's just a vulgar way of saying the same thing they just said. Some of these guys can say it a lot nicer, and then you're not supposed to be offended by it. They say they use more precise English. But we would come up and say the same thing, only it was, you know. But I was very, very pro-Southern in my attitude towards the war until I read... A Short History of the Civil War by a guy with the unlikely name of Fletcher Pratt. And man, was he pro-North to the point of downright hostility and nastiness. And he kept pointing a finger at the Southern leadership. And when he pointed the finger, he was blaming them for the loss of the whole thing themselves. Some of them, well, you know, there was a movement in the late 1863 or 4, for the South to start raising regiments of black soldiers.
Yeah, that didn't... No.
And it was started by an Irishman, what the hell was his name, a division commander, Pat Cleburne.
Yeah.
Who was one hell of a combat leader from all I've read about. But he felt that if you're going to fight for this thing, you have to include every citizen in your, you know...
And the problem was, there were, you know, they were willing to fight, just not for the South.
Yeah.
You know, when Tracy mentioned the night that I talked about the African American Civil War monument in D.C., you know, there are hundreds of thousands of names listed there.
Well, I'll tell you, those guys.
And when you see those hundreds of thousands of names, the South really must have had a connection. Oh, I swear, it's all in sporting.
Well, I'll tell you what, George Thomas had some of those guys that. The big music place where he whipped the hell out of Hood. What's the music capital of Tennessee?
Oh, Nashville.
Nashville, yeah. Battle of Nashville was a horrendous loss for the Confederacy. Why the hell in 1864 this guy thought he could invade the North is like somebody give him a test and see what he's got in him, you know. what kind of drugs he had, what kind of drugs did that guy have in him?
Stump liquor.
Yeah, well, actually, he was loaded with drugs because he had suffered badly. I think he lost an arm and a leg, possibly. My memory of the different leaders is getting foggy. Everything is getting foggy in my old age.
Yeah, the Battle of Franklin and Murfreesboro, yeah. And right.
Yeah. And
ugly, ugly.
Well, in Chattanooga, Thomas had a whole large, pretty large group of black soldiers that he was seen as they marched by him. He was seen taking his hat off and saluting them as they went by. And there was a Southern man. He was a Virginian by birth.
Yeah, see, that's all, very few people know the story of of General Thomas, and they did. He was a Virginian, and for all of that "my honor, my state" bullshit that is promulgated about Robert E. Lee and how, you know, he had a terrible moral quandary. You know what? George Thomas didn't have a moral quandary. George Thomas said, "You know what? I'm not going to commit treason."
Yep, exactly. Simple as that. Simple.
You know, that's why Robert E. Lee holds no, makes me feel no sense. Respect, bull. Should have been hanged.
Well, I had a lot of respect for his military ability, but I couldn't have any respect for this "I shall not go pick up the sword against my state" bull. Because this state stuff is so, where would this country be without the United States idea?
Well, let's see. France would probably have maintained an interest. Britain would have maintained an interest. They both would have warred with each other.
Yep.
You'd have little fractal states here and there. With the European migration after 1848, the upper Midwest would probably be a different country.
Yeah. Well, that's when my group of, not my own people, they didn't start coming until 18. My great-grandfather came here after he fought in a war for the Kaiser in 64 against Denmark and 1866 against the Austrians, and they were gearing up to go after the French in 1870. And as he told my grandfather, his youngest son, who was born in the States, he basically told him, you know, you only get so many chances to go out there and have people shoot at you. And it can become very touchy the third time around.
Right. You roll the dice twice and you win. You know there's snake eyes in there somewhere.
You get out of there. Well, I'll let you go with one story that I picked up from Bernard Fall's book on D&B and Fu. The French Foreign Legion had a whole large group of men still fighting in the Legion who had joined it after they lost a war to a guy named Franco in the late 1930s. The Spanish Civil War.
Yep.
There was a whole large contingent of guys that didn't know what else to do with themselves, so they joined the Legion, and they were fighting the D&B and Fu for the French against freedom. When in 1930s, they were fighting against Franco for freedom. Sometimes people's behavior have me scratching my head, which, of course, is getting easier to do. There's less hair to get in the way. But anyway, I'll let you go, and it's always, the more you think about the past, the more you see the same crap going on today, some of the same people thinking the same way, and will they ever grow up? Will they ever change?
There's the open question.
Yeah, it's beyond me. All I know is I'm going to go out into a bar tonight and make a little noise and have a few laughs. And
I'm so glad you're doing that. I really am.
Try to remember a few song lyrics. That's getting tougher. I just picked up a good album by a good CD by a guy who, what the hell was his name? He was a guy who Ray Charles played keyboard for in his first band when Ray first went into playing.
You know what would be fun, Bill, if we could get somebody just with maybe just an iPhone or something to do a live Ustream broadcast of one of these gigs when you're doing it on one of these evenings.
Say, what the hell is that fat old guy doing up there?
Somebody
get him an oxygen tank, will you? Anyway, I'll let you go. Have a good night, my friend.
Bill, you take care.
Hang in there.
Bye now. Bill, Mr. Stress, who apparently would be performing somewhere in Cleveland this evening. It's about 10 minutes past the hour. We'll take our top-of-the-hour break a little bit late. But since Bill's going to be out there jamming tonight, how about a little Mr. Stress going into the break? This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn.
Get you. you speak her name, you better speak it clean. Cause when you mumble, it makes me mighty mean. I don't fool with your woman, but it don't you mess with mine. Someday I'll get you, put you right on my
Thursday, May 9, 2013.
We need to, all of us need to show up. We should have a good, robust debate, and we should vote.
Senate Republicans obstruct Obama's EPA nominee. OMB says EPA regulations pay off in economic benefits 10 to 1. Honeybee losses accelerate in the U.S. Another coal export terminal bites the dust in Oregon. Plus,
this car performs better than anything we've ever tested before.
Consumer Reports has a new all-time favorite car, and you may be shocked what it is.
All of those shocks and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
How do you sell energy-efficient light bulbs to conservatives? Try putting a trigger on it.
Yep, that'll do it. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I want to say that I am on record from months ago after Lisa Jackson, the last administrator of the EPA, left. I'm on record saying that they were never going to be able to get an approval for a new administrator for the EPA, not in this Senate, not under these Republicans. Am I right so far?
So far, you are right. Republican obstruction reached new levels of absurdity on Thursday as Republican senators led by David Vitter of Louisiana blocked a committee vote on Obama's nominee to head the Environmental Protection Agency, Gina McCarthy. They refused to show up, denying the committee a quorum. McCarthy answered over 1,000 written questions from the Republicans, but Vitter complained that she was, quote, unresponsive.
After answering 1,000 questions?
Yep.
So they just did not show up, right?
Right.
This is not like what we saw, for example, in Wisconsin with Scott Walker, where they had an objection to Scott Walker. The GOP doesn't actually object to anything from this nominee, do they?
No, they object to the EPA's existence.
Exactly. This is unbelievable obstructionism, even by Republican 2013 standards.
And it has even bigger implications for the economy as a whole. Democratic Senator Tom Carper of Delaware noted that this unprecedented level of obstruction is the opposite of what the utility industry has requested.
It makes it hard to tell them what the rules are going to be, to provide a reasonable amount of time, some flexibility, and get out of the way. This nomination deserves a vote. This nominee deserves a vote. And frankly, our country needs it.
But those same GOP senators are attending a same-day fundraiser thrown by energy lobbyists.
Unbelievable.
Meanwhile, the Office of Management and Budget released a new cost-benefit analysis this week of EPA regulations and found that Americans get $10 worth of economic benefits for every $1 invested in complying with Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act standards.
That's because the OMB is a shill for Barack Obama.
Let me repeat that. The nonpartisan OMB's cost-benefit analysis shows EPA regulations return $10 in benefits for every $1 invested. Meanwhile, commercial beekeepers say they lost a third of their bees over the winter, according to a new survey. That's on top of similar losses every year for the last 7 years. The European Union has now placed a temporary ban on a class of pesticides linked to bee deaths. But in the U.S., a new federal study released last week blames a combination of factors and calls for more research, essentially ensuring that no action will be taken on any one of those factors, including pesticides.
And why do I care if bees are disappearing?
Because they are responsible for much of the food that we eat.
Oh, you and your food supply again.
Good news for Oregon. Portland residents and environmental groups are cheering after coal giant Kinder Morgan announced it is canceling attempts to build a new coal export terminal to ship U.S. coal to China. That's the third of six coal export terminals that have been dropped in the Pacific Northwest. Kinder Morgan blames it on unforeseen site problems, but residents credit their huge protests against the increase in coal dust air pollution expected from 12 new coal trains a day through Portland.
You and your air pollution again.
Consumer Reports, known for their unbiased and unforgiving car reviews, say the all-electric Tesla Model S sports car is, quote, the best car we've ever tested.
This car performs better than anything we've ever tested before. Let me repeat that. Not just the best electric car, but the best car. And it performs better than the entries from any of the car companies, even companies that have been around for over 100 years.
The Tesla Model S scored 99 out of 100.
Yeah, but it's really, really, really expensive.
Yes, so. Yes, it is. But, you know, so were cell phones and computers when they first came out as well.
You and your reasoned approaches again.
And Tesla is now turning a profit, along with the entire American auto industry, which overall is seeing its best performance in 20 years. But don't expect to hear about that from Fox News or other right-wing media who, if you'll remember, said, let the American auto industry die in 2009.
For more on that story and the ones we couldn't get to today, drive on over to our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please take note. The Brad Blog has posted our 10,000th article this week. That's our 10,000th article in 10 years. Stop on by and help us celebrate. Find us on the Facebook and follow us on the Twitters at Green News Report. For bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Electric car on roads so dark, to change the end, rewrite the start. The electric car, so good so far.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past the hour, almost halfway through this Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Working in a little early conversation this evening. Enjoyed both of them. Lines are open, 304-658-3333. Skype line's open at Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And again, thanks go out to Diane and Horst, who single-handedly took care of fundraising for this evening, providing us an opportunity to maybe get a little bit ahead and pick up some of the slack that we found ourselves with from the end of April, $300 hole. So if anybody wants to join in the effort, yeah, you are more than welcome and much appreciated for doing so. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com, as is the traditional carbon-intensive mail address. So, onward we go. Two or three stories here, and I'm just trying to figure out how to prioritize them, because the let's work it this way. So you know, or do you, that the right-wing Republican in Congress, the House in particular, who have done not a damn thing about jobs, is actually trying to make the ones that still exist more meaningless, more menial, more drudgery. Talking about H.R. 1406, it has another one of the, you know, there's always an Orwellian name attached to this dreck. The Working Families Flexibility Act. Yeah, let's watch working families flexibly bend themselves into pretzel shapes, trying to keep the family together right. Well, there's nothing about, no, what it does, and here's a little hint for you. In a story about, remarks to the press, Eric Leave Brittany Alone Cantor said, there's absolutely nothing for anybody to object to in this bill. Well, that's kind of a clue that there's a lot to object to. H.R. 1406 was passed along a party line vote, 223 to 204. And what they do, what this thing does, is basically eliminates overtime. You know, time and a half, when you work more than an 8-hour day, that little step forward this country took in terms of not treating its working class like merely disposable tools of the moneyed class. Fortunately, it looks like the bill will die a miserable death in the Senate, but that's only temporary, because these barbarians always come back. What it does is it lets employers give so-called comp time or flex time in lieu of overtime pay. Now, if you've ever been in a situation where comp time or flex time was in the mix, you know something about it. It's meaningless. You never get to use it. And so it's a win-win for the employer. Workers get to swap overtime pay for compensatory time off. They'd get an hour and a half of time for each hour of overtime. On the face of it, oh golly, that sounds nice. Only again, you never get to use it. Oh, I'm sorry, you can't take your comp time this week, Bill. No. We've got the quarterly report coming up, and we're very, very busy. Sorry. Nancy Pelosi said, "More work, less pay for a working mom." And that's no way to say Happy Mother's Day. Steny Hoyer said, everybody on this floor knows the bill's not going to become law, but we're wasting our time on it. We ought to be working on creating jobs and restoring fiscal... Fiscal discipline. Not a partisan rollback of workers' rights, but a bipartisan compromise to help put more Americans to work. Okay, yeah. But really, we got to get the austerity in there again. Fiscal discipline. How? So there's that. And that, in turn, is coupled, or I couple it, with a court ruling. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit has offered up a ruling regarding the National Labor Relations Board. This happened Tuesday. The D.C. Circuit said that the NLRB overstepped its authority by mandating that businesses put notices in the workplace and on their company websites informing employees of their right to form a union, and that failure to do so would constitute unfair labor practices. Now, needless to say, that issue is now pretty much moot because the appeal lies to the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, and their pal, Anthony Kennedy, in the Supreme Court. It's just a poster. A poster that employers are supposed to put up in the break room or wherever that says, there are certain rights you have here, and one of them is to form a union if you so choose. Now, bear in mind, that on the other hand, and this happens frequently, Lord knows there's a special team in Bentonville, Arkansas, that if the letter U is used in a Walmart, they fly the team down to make sure that there's no unionizing activities. The employer can compel employees to sit in a meeting and be harangued about how evil unions are. And you as a worker cannot, being disgusted by it, get up and walk out, because then the employer also has the right to can your ass. Really? On the other hand, the National Labor Relations Board cannot even require that a poster go up that says people have the right to form a union. The ruling was written by Judge A. Raymond Randolph. Anybody want to guess? Let's play Guess Who Appointed Him. Arthur Raymond Randolph appointed to the court in 1990. He was appointed by George Herbert Bush. Surprise, as Gomer would say, surprise, 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 Sergeant Carter. He said, his rationale, if we can call it that, was to say that mandating a poster placement in a workplace is a violation of the employer's right to free speech. Here's what he said in the opinion. A. Raymond Randolph. A. Colossal Dick. Freedom of speech includes both the right to speak freely and the right to refrain from speaking at all. Our corporations, businesses in this country, have such a stranglehold over the body politic that to even mention the idea of joining a union cannot be tolerated. This is kind of like the NLRB. It's kind of like Miranda for labor law. And guess what? You know, Miranda will probably go at some point too. You know, the whole Joe Friday, you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney. If you cannot afford an attorney will be appointed for you at no cost. That. Well, this is the same thing. You have a right to form a union. You cannot be fired for trying to form a union. And A. Raymond Randolph, A. Colossal Dick, held that that's just too dangerous. That the National Labor Relations Board, which is charged with enforcing the labor laws of the nation, had overstepped its mandate. By telling employers that they needed to hang a poster that told people they had a right to form a union. That's some overstepping, isn't it? The NLRB had contended that young workers, especially young adults and high school students, are not likely to be familiar with labor laws. They argued correctly, because we don't teach it. Posters were supposed to be 11 inches by 17 inches with approved text by the NLRB. But that was too much for Judge A. Raymond Randolph, A. Colossal Dick. Because he found that the government had selected the message and ordered its citizens to convey that message. Jesus, A. Raymond Randolph, A. Colossal Dick. It's not like they're demanding them to deny Christ. So this is a 2013 America. The same D.C. Circuit in January, of course, also ruled that recess appointments to the NLRB were illegal. Imagine that. Illegal. There's a reason I call A. Raymond Randolph A. Colossal Dick. He's the judge who wrote the opinion in Hamdan versus Rumsfeld that held that the United States and, well, more particularly, the Bush administration could run kangaroo courts at Guantanamo Bay in direct defiance of the Geneva Conventions. He found specifically that the kangaroo commissions were not in violation of the Geneva Conventions. He was reversed by Supreme Court. He's also the asshat who said federal courts have no jurisdiction to hear petitions of habeas corpus from Guantanamo Bay concentration camp prisoners. Tells you a little something, doesn't it? And meanwhile, Guantanamo Bay is what Guantanamo Bay is. It is going from concentration camp to death camp. So those two, and those are sort of ivory tower things, you know, decisions made by judges in courtrooms who have never had to worry about the abuses that employers are prone to heap on workers. But there are very real-world abuses. Looking at the story here. I'm sure you heard about the Camarillo Springs wildfire in California. It was ugly, dangerous. It's farmland. And farmland often has migrant workers who do the hard work of harvesting. In this case, harvesting strawberries. They thought I was crazy, but I caught them with the strawberries. So, in the midst of this wildfire, there are some real, no kidding, human beings picking strawberries. And it got so dangerous that they quit work. And they went inside because they couldn't breathe. Because ashes were falling on them. 15 of them did. When they went back to work the next day, they found out they'd been fired. You know, for not breathing the ashes. They'd been fired for not getting themselves incinerated for the sake of the profits of some strawberry farmer. Now, there is, theoretically, a happy ending to this. The United Farm Workers stepped in, even though these were non-union workers. The United Farm Workers stepped in and got their jobs back. But only one of these workers has decided to go back to Chrysalida Farms. Wonder why. Yeah, go pick. Go on. Go pick strawberries in the middle of the wildfire. Do that. Don't let the strawberries get hurt. Now, if your lungs are incinerated, we're not worried about that. But protect the crop. And so, yeah, the union negotiated. The union got their jobs back. But that doesn't change the fact that this was done in the first place. Who's the genius who said, we had those 15 pickers who wouldn't incinerate their lungs in the name of our profits. They got to go. We got to fire them. Even though the firing was illegal. Who's the genius who did that? And what is wrong inside his or her mind? Because something obviously is. Well, goddamn it, we got to make a profit here. It's a strawberry farm. Not a charity. Strawberries. We never see this at the grocery store. We just see the display boxes lined up, line after line after line, row after row after row of those delicious looking strawberries. We only see the little plastic boxes of blueberries. And if we, you know, hey, it's 2013. We've got machines that go through the blueberry bushes and pick the blueberries, don't we? It's 2013. No. Somebody has to pick them. Blueberries grow in bushes. Strawberries grow on the ground. They're called strawberries because the way you keep them from rotting as they grow is to put straw underneath them to keep them out of contact, direct contact with the earth. Reminds me of that story of the city slicker who'd gone out to a bed and breakfast one morning and was walking down the road when he sees a farmer coming in the opposite direction with a wagon load of manure. And he says, what are you doing with all that? Don't smell too good. Farmer says, I'm going to put them on my strawberries. City slicker says, well, you got to come to the bed and breakfast where I am. We get sweet cream for ours. I'll be here all week. Try the veal. But we don't think about human beings being fired for not breaking their backs in the midst of ash-laden air to pick strawberries from the ground and put them into some sort of bucket or basket or hopper. Story I saw the other day that the safety regulations that would keep another Bangladeshi factory perhaps from collapsing might run 10 cents extra per garment, 10 pennies. And I'm sure business can't tolerate that.
Oh, put us out of the market. We won't be able to compete anymore.
That death toll has gone past 800 human beings, hasn't it? Did the jackasses at Chrysalita Farms decide to give the jobs back because they felt like they'd gotten away with something in the first place because they weren't having to pay any workers' compensation for, you know, dead migrant harvesters? Is there any way of making sure that we never, ever, ever let past our teeth another strawberry from Chrysalita Farms? If the label on it said Chrysalita Farms, would you still buy it? Because I wouldn't. How do you find out where they are, who they are, and make sure that you, as an operative of the invisible hand of the free market, never reward them for insisting that people who are paid bare minimum, not even subsistence wages, and work themselves into an early grave picking strawberries, how do you make sure you never reward them for what they did to those 15 human beings? But everything in this country, at one point, to one degree or another, is based on some sort of brutalism of another human being. In India, they're making steel. And the steel they're making in India, the people who work in the steel mills are probably working in desperately unsafe surroundings and circumstances and situations. Paid shit for wages. And they're using coal that comes out of a mountain 5 miles, 6 miles as the crow flies from my house. That when it is extracted, pumps poisons into the air and the water. And it's a loser all the way around for everybody except the big boys at the top of the ladder or the pyramid or the dung heap. Shashi and Ravi Ruia are probably, even as we speak, having some sort of high old time there in Mumbai, if they're in Mumbai. Maybe they're in Stad, who knows? And that's strawberry. Who could ever have imagined that a strawberry would be a vehicle of oppression? An instrument of anguish. You know, we had a movement to have, like, cruelty-free hair care and cosmetics. But we're so far gone down the ultra-consumptive capitalist economic model that we don't even think about cruelty-free food. We've been sold on this idea that there are just giant harvesting machines rolling over the fruited plains, burning up diesel fuel and picking the number two field grade corn. And Soylent Green. Oh my, those strawberries are lovely, aren't they? Not when you know what goes into getting them. About your only hope is to grow your own. But we don't have a country that can do that anymore. We're not even a net producer of the majority of our own food. We crossed that little Rubicon back in 2004. And these are not insignificant facts. Oxnard, California, by the way, is where Chris Alita Farms is. At least the California state government is trying to do something proactive about predatory bastards like Chris Alita Farms. California state government wants to create a system of fines for farms that threaten to report workers to immigration authorities in order to keep wages low. See, the right-wingers make the argument, well, you know, all them goddamn immigrants come up here, that's what they drive the wages down. Bullshit! Immigrant workers do not drive down wages. Skinflint employers set them low, please. For those of us who've had gardens, we know, and we grow gardens as a manifestation of privilege, I suppose. We like to have fresh food. Well, I wish I had a garden. I love having a garden every year. I don't have one. I've got this fantasy in my head of like a fresh Brandywine or Cherokee Black tomato somewhere around late July with some of that, oh my God, Benton's bacon from East Tennessee on some sourdough bread, a little lettuce, a little homemade mayo. Whoa! And we like it because it's fresh and it's good. But even the things that we do for our pleasure, these little privileged things, like having a garden because you've got enough ground to have one on and can afford to do it and yada, yada, yada. Even these things getting out there and hoeing in the corn, bending and picking peppers, bending and picking anything, is painful. It's hard work. The spine is a part of the body that degenerates almost faster than any other bone structure because it evolved in such a squirrely fashion. Yeah, the human spine. Yeah, there's more of that intelligent design. Good work! No, not so much. By the time you get into your 40s, and even your late 30s and earlier, depending on what kind of work you do, you will have degenerative disc disease. Now, imagine that from the moment you were much more than crawling, Mama has had you out in the fields with her, and you were doing the whatever work that a little person could do. And things like school come in second. Meanwhile, Jason Richwine over there at the Heritage Foundation thinks that you're stupid because you're Hispanic. If from the instant that you are able to do anything, the thing that you are doing is to help your family continue to feed itself and stay alive, and things like reading and writing become the privileges of some class to which you do not belong, well, what did Ben Franklin say? We are all born ignorant, but to remain stupid takes work. You can take that, you can take that quote in a couple of different ways. You have to work at being stupid. You have to be willfully ignorant, or the mere work of staying alive replaces and makes esoteric ideas like reading and learning. Jason Richwine could not stand the first 3 hours in that strawberry patch in Oxnard, California. He'd be crying like a baby. Oh, my back. These strawberries get heavy. The canvas sack strap is cutting into my neck. Oh! But perhaps even tonight, Jason Richwine of the Heritage Foundation is sitting down somewhere at a restaurant in D.C., and they're bringing him something with some goddamn strawberries on it. My, these are delicious, aren't they, Muffet? Never thinking for an instant that those strawberries were produced by the labor of those people that he deems to be not as intelligent as white people. Like him. Peaches, pears, strawberries, blueberries, raspberries, blackberries, bananas, potatoes, corn, collard greens, turnip greens, parsnips, carrots. See, even if you shop in the organic section of your grocery store and you think that, okay, well, at least my apple hadn't been sprayed with some deadly goddamn poison that's going to kill me if I don't wash it, you cannot even assume from the fact that it is organically grown that it has been humanely produced, because we don't focus on that. Because it isn't a priority. That nectarine may be organic, but somewhere in some shack, a mother exhausted is trying to feed a meal to her exhausted family who exhausted themselves for that organic nectarine. And there is no guarantee that there was any sort of humanity or humane practice involved in its production. Because the essential model of what we do and how we produce in this country does not take things like humane treatment into account. And of course, one of the best ways to try to ensure some level of humane treatment is for people to be able to band together by virtue of what is referred to as the First Amendment right to freedom of association and form what we call a union. And A. Raymond Randolph, a colossal dick, can't tolerate that idea. It's moments like this that it's real easy to understand what Bill, Mr. Stress, was saying a little bit ago when he says, we're going to hell but the question is how long before we get there. And when strawberry pickers are expected to remain in the fields as the fires get close enough to consume them and incinerate their lungs. Well, that kind of sounds like hell's not that far away, doesn't it? Any minute now, I'll be getting an email from someone saying, well, Bob, thanks a million. You ruined the damn strawberries for me. Happy to oblige. Ruined for me, too. And all we got in common is our misery. And the least we can do is share it. 2.5 minutes before the hour. Your calls are welcome on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, 304-658-3333, or on the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn. This is the Horn. This is Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Stashed his trash in Ecuador, bought a good suit of clothes, flew on up to Mexico, standing by the shore, waiting for some mystery man to pay him for his time, thinking about all the money he'd made, couldn't help to ease his mind. A vanity dreaming, boy, he's just dreaming his life away. Daddy chopped that sugar cane, so one day he fell dead. Jesus had a wandering feeling, swimming around in his head. Sailing on a midnight boat, there were no questions asked. The water so green and the air was so clean, he just stuck right to his task. Havana daydreaming, boy, he's just scheming. Life fan stirs the air, cigar smoke this world.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Well, after that little cheerful filibuster, let's actually have some good news. Almost 2 minutes past the hour here as we roll in the final segment of tonight's program. The good news coming out of Minnesota at this hour. The Minnesota House, by a vote of 75-59, has approved, passed, a marriage equality bill. It looks like it's going to get a quick trip through the Minnesota Senate. The Minnesota Senate Judiciary and Finance Committees have both approved or endorsed the bill. And it will be taken up this Monday by the Minnesota Senate. The Senate Majority Leader is named Tom Back. And he says he thinks he has the votes to pass it. Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton has already said that he will sign it and hailed the potential of marriage equality becoming the law of the state of Minnesota as, quote, a society-changing brave moment. Now, how did the House vote break? Typically. Of 73 Democratic Farm Labor Party members, that's the Democratic Party of Minnesota, of 73 members of the DFL in the House, 71 voted in favor. And on the Republican side, there are 61 House Republicans, 57 of them voted against equality, voted against full constitutional citizenship for people who happen to be gay. Because that's what marriage equality means. It's a constitutional issue. It's a rights issue. It's a human rights issue. And Minnesota's a pretty doggone nice place. So that says something. If they get marriage equality in Minnesota and Iowa, they've got it in Iowa. If they get it in Minnesota, that changes the landscape a little bit in the upper Midwest, doesn't it? So good on them. Take our victories where we can get them. And hopefully build, you know, all the, and I'll say this, and I'm not trying to rain on any parades or anything, but I hope, and this is always the hope, I hope that in what appears to be a growing wave of understanding that things like marriage equality really, really do matter, that when the people who have engaged in this struggle achieve the victory they have sought, that they don't stop. That they don't say, well, our work here is done, we can go and get married, and other issues don't matter. Because they do. And a lot of people are speaking up and speaking out, and have been for a very long time, about marriage equality. And what we have to do is reach that moment of enlightenment when we recognize that there are no single issues, that all issues are inexorably bound up in others. That issues of marriage equality tie into issue of paycheck fairness, tie into issues of so-called environmental justice. There's no environmental justice, there's no social justice, there's only justice. So that's my hope. Indeed it is. Reading an email here. Checking a link that just came in. It doesn't seem to want to look. Oh, there it is. Famous Moms, a photo tribute. Okay, I'll have to digest that a little bit later. It's a little too much to do on the fly. So, all right, now I'm just going to gather my wits about me a little bit. Next up. Okay, did that. Happy news. News Ninja Gene sent this along a couple of nights ago. In the midst of everything else that's going on, a little bit of, because I mentioned justice a minute ago, a little bit of justice happened. Appleton, Pennsylvania. It reminded me of what Jim says sometimes, that the wheels of justice grind slowly, but they grind exceeding fine. This has taken years to clear the system. It's the story of a truly awful excuse for a member of the human race. A guy by the name of Mark Chavarella Jr. For quite some time, people didn't call him Mark Chavarella. They called him Your Honor. And people in suits looked at him and said things like, "May it please the court." Mark Chavarella was a judge in Pennsylvania. And whether it be in Pennsylvania or any other state or any other nation, being a judge carries tremendous duty and the requirement to avoid even the appearance of impropriety. Mark Chavarella said, "F the appearance, I'm going for the impropriety." You may recall the story that in Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, a pair of judges engaged in a practice so odious, so vicious, and so pathetically money-grubbing as to be difficult to believe. But they did it. And they used the powers, the tremendous powers of their office to do it. Back in 2003, Mark Chavarella started taking bribes. And you know that when we think about that, we usually think of like the mob, you know, bribing a judge, paying, you know, fixing juries, that kind of stuff. This wasn't that. This was worse. Mark Chavarella was taking bribes to sentence children to prison. In the long-term investigation of what he and his fellow traveler did, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court says that 5,000 young men and women, these were children in the juvenile justice system, wherein the well-being of the child is supposed to be of at least co-equal status with the need of society to punish and prevent crime, 5,000 young men and women were sent to prison had their constitutional rights stripped. For money. Mercifully, this thing was caught. But not before collecting millions of dollars in bribes from PA Child Care and Western PA Child Care Detention Centers. Child care. A 10-year-old appeared before Chavarella. He had apparently gone joyriding in his mother's car. Not someone else's, his mother's. And in the process, he bottomed out the car. In return for a sum of money paid, Mark Chavarella sentenced the 10-year-old to 2 years in juvenile prison. See, Mark Chavarella was known for being a law and order judge. A hanging judge. Because people like to vote for those people, those kind of judges. Oh, he's going to be tough on crime. And it turned out if he could be tough on crime and collect a few million dollars in the process, well, thank you very much. And though he collected millions, he's going to have to pay back $1.2 million in restitution because he has been sentenced. He has been sentenced to almost 30 years in prison. Why it wasn't life, I don't know. These are private prisons, of course, that he was sentencing the children to. And in the quarterly profit and loss statement, I'm sure that the millions of dollars that were paid to he and his colleague, Judge Michael Conahan, were written off as the cost of doing business. But he's going away. He's going to prison. He had lawyers. They argued at sentencing, you gotta love this argument. I mean, when you've got the law, this is an old lawyer in maxim. When you have the law, pound on the law. When you have the facts, pound on the facts. When you ain't got neither, pound on the table. His lawyer at sentencing argued the fact that he has received criticism in the media was punishment enough for a man like him. And apparently, based on the news report that I'm looking at, made that argument with a straight face. The lawyer claimed he will forever be unjustly branded as the Kids for Cash judge. Unjustly? Unjust? I understand the obligation of a lawyer to make a zealous defense of his client, but when 5,000 children have been pumped into the for-profit prison pipeline for money? Counselor, I'm thinking that's an argument too far, unjust. If there is any mercy in this process, it lies in the fact that many of the children that he sold into bondage... That's what he did! He sold children into bondage in the name of the people of Pennsylvania have at least been released. But at what cost? Chief Justice Ronald D. Castile of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, unfortunately, two judges in Luzerne County have caused unimaginable taint to the laudable efforts of many dedicated individuals. Conduct for which these two judges presently are paying dearly. You think this was a one-off? You think these are the only two judges ever to be corrupted by the flow of money out of a prison industrial complex that is predicated upon profit? I bet you it happens every day. And not just in Pennsylvania. Because see, these for-profit prisons have to have bodies in beds in order to turn the profit, in order to satisfy the dividend yearnings of their shareholders. Profit above all things. Holy profit. How many mothers wept? How many fathers bowed their heads to see what this man was doing to their children? How many children without parents there at all were simply cast upon his tender mercies and then pumped into the pipeline and, oh, the check cleared? Good. 10 years! He will forever be unjustly branded as the Kids for Cash judge. But he's going up the river. He's going to stay up the river. Hopefully. If there's any mercy to go with that justice, there won't be some sort of weak-kneed negotiations like the federal government is in with Jeffrey Skilling's lawyer to get him out of his long sentence in as little as 4 years. You know that, right? Enron, Jeffrey Skilling? The guy who hoodooed God knows how many people out of everything they had in the way of savings? Yeah, the government's negotiating with his lawyers to keep him from filing for a new trial. File for a new trial, you swine! See, he's got the money for the lawyers because he got to keep the ill-gotten gain that he made. Twenty past the hour. Lines are open. 304-658-3333. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Ain't grand.
Just magnificent.
I'll tell you, you've got a lot of people sitting on the bench who shouldn't be there.
Oh, believe me, I know.
And it's just amazing.
I knew one once who was a Nazi. A real one.
Well, you know.
You know, in this country.
Oh, I thought you meant over there.
No, here, in West Virginia.
Yeah, well, there were plenty of them over there. If you don't believe it, just ask Burt Lancaster if you could.
No, over here, in West Virginia, on a bench.
Oh. Enthrall me with your acumen. Tell me about this critter.
Oh, I don't want to go into too much detail, but, yeah, he collected Nazi memorabilia, was real proud of the fact that he had an SS death's head cap that was actually worn by a member of the SS, and he displayed them in his office.
Well, I mean,
you remember back in the 90s when that there was a plot that was uncovered to bomb the FBI center in up in Fairmont.
I think so.
Yeah, he spent about 2 months looking like a dog trying to shit a peach pit. Because he was in it up to his eyeballs, or so it was thought.
So this judge kept SS memorabilia in his office?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, I have no problem with people doing that, you know, with their private collections and stuff like that. I mean, that's just the nature of collectors, because I'm a collector. I mean, I don't have any...
Kept a World War II Luger in his desk?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're a fine pistol, but nonetheless, you don't keep that kind of stuff in your office, because it definitely indicates what type of person you really are, that's for sure. And it's just amazing that you have these people who are clothed in their black raiment, who can, on one hand, pass judgment on children and send them into a pipeline, and he was getting kickbacks?
No, they were straight-up bribes. He was being paid to send children to prison.
My Lord.
Millions of dollars over time.
How in the world could they even... I mean, I guess it was all cash, right?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I was joking about the check clearing.
Well, I didn't think the check would have to clear with somebody like that, because good Lord in heaven... But, you know, the trouble with that is it gives a whole lot of other good people who try to do justice.
Yeah, and it also points out something else, Jim, because, for instance, the 10-year-old who got sent for two years to, like, maximum security juvenile prison for bottoming out his mama's car. When you try to appeal something like that, Jim, it's very, very difficult to do, because... On appeal, the discretion of the trial court judge is afforded tremendous deference.
You mean latitude?
No, deference. The judge is presumed to be correct in his decisions. And so consequently, you know, that number is shocking. 5,000 children went into for-profit juvenile prisons. And there was damned little could be done about it until he screwed up and they got caught.
I wonder what they're going to do to try to ameliorate the conditions of the sentences he imposed on those children.
Well, every one that was sentenced for cash or, you know, was sold into bondage, obviously has a rather, one would think, a rather... serious claim to make against the state of Pennsylvania. You know, the only thing you can do is get some sort of settlement.
But in order to do that, they're going to have one hell of a good lawyer to present their case, right?
I would say they will do better with one than without one.
You see, that's the thing. As long as you can get an attorney, and as long as you're wealthy enough to have an attorney that you can charge this, oh, I don't know what, $400 an hour, $500 an hour, or probably the rate's gone up $1,000 an hour. You can sort of skid around the system and get through it.
Well, but the thing is, because these were juveniles, and I'm speculating now, there are different rules that apply to juveniles in the justice system, even in cases of civil lawsuits.
I would think so.
Where the court can appoint what's called a guardian ad litem. And one would hope that since the Pennsylvania Supreme Court engaged in a full examination of this matter, one would hope that they would take the next step and propose some sort of remedies for these children. Because you don't just send them back and say, well, you know, sorry. They are entitled to compensation because they were unjustly imprisoned, falsely imprisoned.
Now, this one thing I don't know a whole lot about are the for-profit private penal systems. When did this start to evolve?
In the late 80s, early 90s, a lot of this has to do with Reaganism. And it is of a piece, Jim, with the same overarching philosophy that says that the fundamental nature, for instance, Mark and I were talking last night about how during the Iraq War, the Bush administration decided that they would hire private contractors to deliver the mail.
I do believe I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's part of the whole privatization craze, because there is a core tenet of right-wing conservatism that says the government can't do anything right and that everything will be better if we just do it for a profit. It is, for instance, why I pay a water bill to West Virginia American Water Company instead of my local public service district.
Oh, so they provide your water and everything.
Yeah.
Because it's been
privatized.
I can just imagine what type of quality assurance goes into that.
It's awful, and the prices go up and up and up and up and up. If I have a water bill that's less than $100 a month, it's a miracle.
That's a lot of water.
That's a lot of cost.
That's what I mean, a lot of cost.
And every time you turn around, they're asking for a rate increase.
Oh, yeah. And when they go before the public service, did they have to go before the Public Service Commission to get it?
Sure. And the Public Service Commission says, go ahead.
Yeah, they pretty much rubber stamp all that stuff.
Yeah, because a lot of them are former industry hacks in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there are a lot of crimes and a lot of sins committed just in the name of the cost of doing business. That's for damn sure.
It is. It is indeed.
And the quality of service is definitely not good, and the product is even worse.
Isaac just sent this along. It started in Pennsylvania in 2006. A headline from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette back then: Texas firm to operate Pennsylvania's first private prison in Clearfield. That was 2006.
I wonder what the cost per inmate is with these private people.
Well, I mean, that's where they do their so-called cost containment.
I know, but as opposed to if it were a state-run facility being, you know, administered by the state.
Well, yeah, exactly. Consider the business model. Either way, the state makes a determination that it will pay, I don't know, $62 a day per prisoner. Well, in a state-run system, that $62 per day means that, you know, that goes into paying the guards and keeping the facilities up and, you know, feeding the prisoners, medical, blah, 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 all of that. Well, what happens in the private system is they get the same $62 a day, and then they say, okay, we'll serve them prison cheese instead of real cheese. The bologna will be made out of Soylent Green instead of meat. We'll buy bread that's made out of wood shavings instead of, you get the idea, and they cost contain on the backs of the incarcerated people.
And are these correctional officers in these facilities also private employees, or are they state employees?
It varies from state to state, but you know, oftentimes, yeah, they're private employees, independent contractors. That's
I just wonder what type of quality assurance is conducted on the hiring of these people, or is it just anybody who will walk in off the street and they put a uniform on?
You get a lot of that.
Well,
I mean, even for instance, at Mount Olive, the state prison here in West Virginia, the prison nurses, they're private contractors. They are not employees of the state.
so they have no means of recourse whatsoever as far as any type of job complaint or any type of job security or whatever.
Right, and remember, Joe Manchin took the a very nice workers' compensation system out behind the barn and beat it to death when he was governor and replaced it with a privatized system. So God forbid that one of these people actually gets hurt on the job, because it's dangerous work.
Oh, that thing called Brick Street?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a real beauty.
And you'll have to, and if you get hurt, just like anybody in the state, if you get hurt, you have to fight like a dog just to get workers' comp. Goes on and on and on.
You know, it's just amazing how greedy people have become.
Well, it's not just people, Jim. It is people acting in concert as corporations. That's where the trouble begins.
Well, I mean, even local businesses and stuff like that. For example, there's a house cleaning service here. And I'm not going to call any names, okay?
Sure.
Now, in order for one person to come over to keep my place in order, they charge me $68, okay?
Mm-hmm.
$17 an hour for 4 hours. And guess how much is kept by the company?
Oh, I can imagine.
10.
Yeah. Because the person doing the work is making roughly minimum wage.
Exactly.
And for folks who want to follow up on the private prison industry and so forth, Luda just sent in an email. She said, I think it was in Michael Moore's movie, Capitalism, A Love Story, that he covers a lot of this.
I haven't seen that yet.
It's worth it.
Well, I don't know. I think that's part of what's wrong with this country is the fact that people are being treated that way. And when they're treated that way and they're being forced to, and they realize that they're being taken advantage of just to get some kind of paycheck.
Yeah. Well, Jeremy just wrote in from Vermont, Jim, and he said, not to mention all the prisons that have riots are mainly private prisons. He says these corporations are sick. Jeremy adds, I worked in Vermont State Prison for a bit, and trust me, no one, guard or prisoner, liked these places.
Oh, no. A prison is not supposed to be a place where you like.
No, but I mean, even the people who were working in it didn't like working in it.
Well, I taught school in a prison for a year in South Carolina. I can tell you one thing. You talk about a place where you would not want to be. You know, I needed a job, and I was waiting to get on the registry, civil service, and it taught me a whole hell of a lot about the penal system in this country and how prisons were nothing more than graduate schools for different types of higher crime.
Yeah.
And if you weren't a criminal before you went in there,
you're going to come out one
with at least a MA or a PhD.
Right. It's criminal university.
You got it. That's for sure. And the whole thrust has been changed from rehabilitation to simple maintenance and incarceration.
Warehousing, and frankly, it's got a soupçon of vengeance in it, too. Well, more than that, probably.
Oh,
because we really are a nation that enjoys the infliction of punishment.
Well, I mean, they have something that's called the hole where they put prisoners in, solitary confinement. And I have heard the wails of men coming out of these holes in the ground, literally. And it's something the likes of which, when you've heard it once, you'll never forget it.
I can well imagine, Jim.
And you can imagine the, and they have what they call adjustment committees that judge prison offenses and stuff like that. And the types of people, and this is a state-run prison in South Carolina, but you can imagine the type of things that went on there. But in the prison where I worked, this is back in the 1980, was it? I can't remember the time. It's flown by on Gossamer Wings, I'm afraid to tell you. But Psychology Today sent a plant in there as a dummy prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
And sweetheart, they busted the whole shebang. When that thing came out in Psychology Today, it was called Watery River Correctional Institute. Minimum security, big farm, stuff like that. But when the treatment of prisoners and stuff like that and what went on there was surfaced and the Department of Corrections had to deal with it, they weren't very happy at all. So it's gone on a long time. You know, even in your state-run facilities, you've got a lot of that going on, too. You've got a lot of guards that are on the take and stuff like that. Well, I mean, I guess because they don't pay them a decent wage, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the civil service was designed to put people in place who made enough money so they would not be subject to bribes and stuff like that, you know? And not be on the take, as it were. But I guess you simply can't resist that temptation of making a few bucks on the side, can you?
I guess some people can't. Irish Dave just wrote in and said, as the corrections staff used to phrase it, we are doing life 8 hours at a time.
Well, he's not far wrong.
No. And Jeremy pointed out, he said, I meant that no one liked the private prisons. In fact, they were hated. They were inherently more dangerous on the whole. And, of course, I remember the story from the Don T. Hutto Correctional Facility in Texas, where they incarcerate little children in a private prison. Don T. Hutto was the man behind Corrections Corporation of America. He's something of a progenitor or whatever. But that's where we put immigrants who, you know, families, children, what have you, who had committed no crime. Just warehoused them in a private prison.
You know, that's just amazing, but it's not amazing because,
well, there's an America that we dare not look at, Jim, because it's a very brutal and frightening place.
Yeah, it is. It's just amazing how people are dealt with. Remember the boat people from Cuba?
Sure, the Mariel boat lift.
Mm-hmm. The people who came over here, that Castro wanted to empty his jails and stuff like that and get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you know where they house those people?
The Atlanta Penitentiary, if I recall correctly.
No.
No?
Fort McCoy, Wisconsin.
I'll be darned. I didn't know.
You can imagine coming from sunny Cuba and going up to Fort McCoy, Wisconsin in the winter, where you have to plug your vehicles in at night, keep them from freezing over.
Yeah, that's a different world.
Absolutely.
A bit of a shock to the system.
More than a shock to the system, let me tell you, that thing would turn out to be a real glorified mess. It really did. Well, I'm glad the judge got sent up the river, and I hope he has a big old bald-headed guy named Bubba as his boyfriend, and that will be the best thing that could ever happen to him. And he could really know what it's like to be screwed.
Yeah. Well, he's got 30 years to learn, and hopefully he'll serve them all.
He probably won't. I'm sure he'll get out for a good time and stuff like that, unless it's a mandatory sentence with no problem.
And, you know, he's not just a judge. He's a lawyer. You want to bet he's probably got some of that bribe money stashed away for the day he gets out?
Well, I'm sure he does, and he's probably got it working on him to get his sentence reduced and stuff like that, because, you know, a little hush money can do a lot of talking.
Oh, ain't that the truth. Jim, you have yourself a good evening.
Yeah, you too.
All right, buddy. Our buddy Jim, not far at all from here. On the Skype line, Bob.
Hey, Bob. This is Bob in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Stan.
Ah, pleased to talk to you.
The very home of Virginia Double X Fox.
Oh, my God. like I said the other day, when Ferg and I were walking in the halls of Congress, we'd walk past these doors, and it's loony, and we walked past Virginia Double X Fox's door, and I went, really crazy, dangerous, you know, and Ferg's...
No kidding.
Yeah, and so, I know of which you speak. She's been kind of quiet lately, though, hasn't she?
She has, but she's just sitting back and enjoying all of the fun the North Carolina State Legislature has been having.
And they have been, haven't they?
Oh, they have. They've been running the ALEC playbook from one end to the other.
I got an article. I think Ron and Raleigh sent it to me. I forget where it came from, but yeah, they are really up to their chins in ALEC. Are they not?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Every day I look at the paper and there's something. There's just one more item on the checklist that they're taking care of.
And the people in North Carolina like this how?
Oh, they voted for him. Yeah, unfortunately, they've got the. There's an awful lot of North Carolina that is right behind them all the way, and I hate to say that. There are pockets of liberalism throughout the state, but they've been all gerrymandered into their own little worlds, where we have no power whatsoever.
Oh, gee.
It's kind of sad. Listen, I don't get a much chance to listen to you live, so I listen to you on the podcast almost every day. And I was listening on Mondays about you were talking about. Your experience with call centers, and I just wanted to put in a little defense of call centers that not all of them are as bad as you describe.
No, not all of them are, and a lot of it has to do with the work you're doing, at least.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
You know, I was hustling credit cards to people who had no business with them.
Right. Well, we're working an inbound. I work at an inbound call center. And we have the advantage of being a union shop.
CWA.
And, yep. And so just to give you an idea of how things are a little bit different, we've got about 700 people answering the phones at our center. 45% of them have been there 20 years or more.
Wow.
And I've got we've got 16 still answering the phones who have been there over 40 years.
Oh my heavens!
So you know we got to be doing something right.
I'd say so, and I don't want you to give away any sensitive information, but I mean, is this like tech support or?
No, it's reservations.
Oh, okay, that's doable. That's nice. My experience with it was the other evil thing I did, and far more than the credit cards, they're really gonna get the marshmallows out to roast over my toasting hide for this. I hustled AOL.
Mm. Well, that was a long term project, wasn't it?
Oh my. And the sad thing was, I was very, very good at it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I tell you what, I'm working in the lowest of the low management there, so I don't get to answer the phones. And I tell you what, I listen to the guys answering the phones every day. It is not an easy job.
No,
it really isn't. And I have the greatest respect for the guys who have stuck in there year after year, and provided the good service. It's just amazing.
And that's the thing. When I was talking about when I was talking about my experience, I wasn't talking about it being a negative experience from the standpoint of the people that I was working with. I worked with a lot of nice people who were really working hard and trying to get by, and you know, I tried to help each other and everything.
One of the other things I wanted to mention to you, you also this Yahoo who's doing this this march on Washington.
Yeah, Adam Kokesh.
Yeah, how many of us think that when they get to the bridge, he's going to be the first one in line?
Oh no, I'm sure he'll lead from the rear.
Oh yes, absolutely. I don't think he has any intention of putting his neck out to be the first one arrested.
All that business about, you know, we'll let this be peaceful if the police do. Uh-uh.
Yeah, right.
There's some homicidal ideation inside all of these gun goobs. I mean, there really is. And if somebody, you know, well, what's that old saying? Let's you and him fight.
Right.
Yeah, it's gonna be one of those. So, but the fact that he's gone from 700 signups to 2,000 signups in the space of 3 days.
Well, that tells me that that, you know, there are lots of people in North Carolina, just like that, there are lots of people in North Carolina that are not seeing things through crystal clear glasses. A lot of people around the country are saying the same thing.
Well, let's have another wager, Bob, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Any bets on the number of Confederate flags that will be there?
Yeah, whether they're originating in Georgia or in Minnesota.
Right. There. Well,
doesn't make a difference.
Exactly. There will be two things in broad profusion, far more than any American flags. There will be Gadsden flags and Confederate flags.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. I kind of hate it that Agnes won't let me go and watch.
Well, bless Agnes for trying to keep you safe.
Well, yeah, she does try to be my brains when I abandon them.
Exactly. And this thing you're talking about tonight, about the prisons, I didn't hear. Maybe I just missed it. How much have they fined these independent prison companies for they taken away?
Yeah, that wasn't
in the story. Have they taken away their license?
No, that wasn't in the story. Apparently, they're just still, you know, the putting them through.
They have to move on to judges.
Yeah. So, I read this about this story over the years, and I've never seen anything that indicates that the people paying the bribes went down. Maybe they did, but yeah.
Well, I would sure like to see that, because you know there ought to be something somewhere. In logical law that says if you pay the bribe, you lose the contract.
Well, you know, I think federal law has or had something like that once upon a time. But I don't know if it exists in Pennsylvania law. Because these are state cases.
Exactly. And with things going state by state, we're just getting nibbled at from around the edges. Maybe we can win a couple of federal offices, but we're getting and try to keep control of the presidency or one of the houses of Congress. But we're getting nibbled at every year a little bit more.
Well, Bob, the right wing was very smart about this. They were fiscally conservative on this when they realized that it would be much cheaper to buy off and ruin individual state legislatures because the races aren't that expensive.
Yeah.
And so they did that. They then did the gerrymandering, and now the chance of of really meaningfully taking back, for instance, the U.S. House of Representatives is contingent upon the first real meaningful opportunity is January of 2023.
Well, yeah, and you know that they've had their eye on the census for at least the past 10, 12 years, knowing that if they were able to get in control, they would be in control for the next 10 years.
Right, and do you remember, I guess maybe 10 years ago or so, when the right wing was having a hissy about the way the census was conducted? And then you had all this foolishness in 2010 about the census from the right wing. They're scared to death of the census because it confirms the very real world fact that their white privilege is shrinking.
Yeah,
and that's why they want to manipulate that too. And I'm sure there's an ALEC plan for it.
Yeah. My brain just went sideways. I was thinking of something that they were talking about eliminating the need for, and I can't think of it right now. It's just again one of the daily adventures that comes up in the newspaper about what the legislature is doing. But I can't think of it right offhand. But you know, as far as the right wing, the thing they've been really smart about this is that for years and years and years they've been concentrating on the local level. They've been grooming people for the school boards and for the city councils and for the county commissioners and getting their hooks into those places, getting people trained up in the means of local government, moving them up to the state legislatures and on into the Congress, and doing the same thing with the local judgeships. So, you know, if we ever have anything to learn from the right wing, it's, you know, get active at the local level and build your way up.
That's exactly the truth. And you know, the funny thing is, now remember when the Republican Party issued their post-mortem on the November election? And mm-hmm. they said, you know, we were just whipped because the Obama campaign had people working on the ground for years in advance of us?
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, they probably did, but the thing is, that campaign organization is not necessarily in place for other candidates or for
right
or for general principles. And so when the campaign goes away, that organization goes away.
Right. Well, Obama for America is the only example of something that did last from one campaign to the other.
Yeah.
And they're trying to keep it up and going in some sort of fashion by converting it into Organizing for America. Kind of the same thing Democracy for America, the old Dean campaign.
Yeah.
Was Dean for America, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And the thing is, I was about to say, that's one of the reasons I've always been such a fan of Dean's 50-state strategy.
Right. Exactly.
But that, of course, had to go.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's because of the what they're now calling the New Dems.
Yeah.
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 I guess the
those guys.
The blue dogs have name has fallen out of favor, I guess, and so they're calling themselves New Dems now.
Well, they pretty much got run too. I mean, after a while,
that's
if you're
true.
In Georgia, why would you vote for a fake Republican when you can have the genuine article? And that's all those so-called blue dogs were.
Or the First District of South Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
In Congress, she's not much of a Democrat at all.
No, if you're a right to work Democrat, that kind of means you're not much of a Democrat. And of course, you know, look at what happened. What was it? Was it in 2010 that Heath Shuler took it on the chin in North Carolina?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Another one of those. Exactly. Well, Bob, it's good to talk to you. I have to run along.
Yes, sir.
We're getting toward the end of the program, but don't be a stranger. You know, when you've got the opportunity and you're not listening to the podcast.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
Take care.
Thank you, Bob.
Bye.
Right, good night.
Bob calling from North Carolina, and we'll try to get one more call in here. Hey, welcome to the program.
This is Edward.
Well, hey, Edward.
I was so pleased to hear about Minnesota. I was in graduate school at the University of Oklahoma almost 50 years ago with two guys, and their last names were Baker and McCall, and that's all right because that's the case that came before the Supreme Court. They lived in Minneapolis, and they used to stop by and visit me when I lived in Kansas, and they were the first ones that ever sued to make marriage between gay people legal. Of course, the Supreme Court did not grant certiorari, so there you go. Baker and McConnell now are vindicated. Now, it's been so long ago, I don't know whether they're still living or not, because I know how old I am. But it took a long time.
It did indeed.
Yes, it did. And I'm so happy, and I hope they're still around somewhere, doddering around like me.
Well, they've got something to celebrate, if they are.
You're telling me. I actually saw the briefs that they submitted to the Supreme Court. I mean, people just say, oh, I'll just take this to the Supreme Court. La-di-da. The Supreme Court does not have to listen to one thing. they can throw your ass on the street.
Yes, they can.
Yep. And they have to be bound in leather and all sorts of things. And I looked at their briefs and everything, had them in my own hands. And I hope somewhere, they are still living and know that their hard work is very appreciated by a whole lot of us.
Yes, indeed. And if they can get it through, you know, these are dominoes that are falling.
Yes.
And, you know, the right-wingers are still having a hissy. I don't know if you heard about it or not, Edward, but in Iowa, they tried to cut the pay of the judges who decided in favor of marriage equality.
Yes, I heard that. I know those. Some of these people are just toads. They're worse than toads. Actually,
well,
toads.
The word I use for them has a T and a D and an S.
And I know exactly what that is.
But it's a tad bit more scatological.
You sound like my great aunt. That was one of her favorite words.
Is this the same one? Is this the same one with the joke?
What's that?
Here I stand out in the hall.
No, that was Cousin Edna.
Oh, that was Cousin Edna, right? Okay.
No, this was my great aunt Lily. Oh my Lord, you didn't mess with that woman. She'd mess you up good.
Well, Edward, you have a wonderful evening. I appreciate you calling in.
Well, I just had to call in and tell you about Baker and McCall, my dear friends that I have not seen for many years, but they started this whole thing a long time ago, and they lived in Minneapolis.
Well, it's a beautiful thing, and I'm glad you did, because I get the end the show tonight saying, wow, I learned something today, which is always good.
You take care.
You have a good night, Edward.
You're one of my favorite people on this earth.
Well, thank you very kindly. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye now. That's just doggone nice. How often do you get you're one of my favorite people on the earth? There's a lot of people out there. Thank you, Edward. That is heartwarming, to say the very least. And I also must say that we got to get out of here. And again, thanks to Diane and Horst for taking care of tonight's fundraising. It is much appreciated. Back tomorrow night with Friday on the Front Porch. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen, you first and foremostly, for keeping the program going with your kind contributions. Of course, thanks go out to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Ben Burge. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. We talked a little bit about things you can do to help out the ACE Act earlier in the program. I sure hope you will. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. And here comes Rick Smith on the horn.